Welcome to the Faith Element Podcast for the November 10, 2019 session, focusing on Luke chapter 20, verses 27 through 38. Silly Questions. I'm David Cassidy.
I'm Nikki Hardiman.
I'm Crystal Shepherd.
And I'm Bert Montgomery.
All right, so I'm still enjoying memories from my recent trip to Italy, which was, as I've described to my podcasting friends here, a bit of a culinary journey. So I'm curious, what is the most interesting thing you have ever eaten while traveling?
Ooh, I've got it. I went to Indonesia several years ago. My brother was there for a short period and went to visit him, and we ate durian.
Durian?
Durian, D-U-R-I-A-N. And it is an interesting experience. The fruit, it's rather large. I think it grows on a tree, and it's spiky on the outside. And and some remarked that God is looking at people eating it going, I put spikes on it. It's saying, don't eat me. And I mean,
and here are us humans going, hey, that looks good.
Right, right. So I will not say it was an enjoyable experience for me at all. But the people there love it. And they eat it like I eat watermelon, which is a lot. And so but it was incredibly interesting. They say that after three tries, you fall in love with it. But I really wasn't willing to do two more tries.
Okay. I think for me, well, one, I don't like raw fish. So when I traveled out to California, I had my first sushi, which was pretty gross. And then I had a friend have me, I think we were traveling to visit them in Ohio, and they, I think it's after they moved there, and they had me try tripe. So it's intestines, and yeah, neither one of those, because it's, no. I just can't. I'm a texture person, and between the raw fish and the sushi and the tripe, I was like, I'm done. I'm done.
Yeah, I'm done. So.
I'm boring and I'm picky. So
yes. It just could be any number of things, couldn't it?
Yeah.
It means you're smart.
Yeah. He's like, I'm not putting that in my mouth.
That's the fittest right there.
I can tell you how delicious the pepperoni pizza is in Chicago.
You did eat that. All right. Well, probably the most interesting thing that I had on this trip, have you ever had sweet bread?
I've had bread that is sweet.
Yeah.
That's what. We had a little dish that was called sweetbread, and we weren't quite sure what it was until we looked it up. And this was at a restaurant where they are proud of not wasting things. And so they use all parts of the animal. And apparently this is the pancreas of the cow. So it was actually quite delicious.
No.
What did it taste like?
Well, of course, they called it sweetbread, and so we were like, well, and it had kind of a bread-like texture, but it was, okay, so it was a little fried. So, I mean, they had, in some kind of cool fat, I don't know, it was cooked, but it was delicious. And so then later we go, oh, that's what it was. Well, it was pretty good. But, if they had told us up front what it really was, I'm not sure it would have been as enjoyable.
Right.
Yeah.
I might throw up. I don't.
I'm sorry. Well, in that case, we don't want Crystal to be ill. And we have a passage here from Luke. So maybe we should, Bert, talk about silly questions.
Sure. Listeners will know that I am a huge Monty Python fan. And one of my favorite skits from the Monty Python's Flying Circus is when Graham Chapman plays a very, very proper Englishman. And they'll get so far in a skit and it'll just kind of really get out there. and they don't have a way to end it. And Graham Chapman will just walk in and say, that's enough, that's enough. This skit was really funny at the beginning, but now it's just silly. It's just silly. And the whole episode, he'll interrupt and stop skits and move on to something else because it got silly. Well, I thought about that because in Luke chapter 20, we have a series of questions. It begins with Jesus's authority being questioned. Then there's a parable of the tenants in the vineyard when Jesus asks a question. Then there's the question about paying taxes. And then we get to where we are today, in which the Sadducees come to Jesus and they ask a question. Now, they ask the question about the resurrection. And they ask a question about whose wife will a woman be in the resurrection? Because the tradition, of course, when at the time in the culture, when women were cared for and protected by husbands, and they had no rights or livelihood apart from being married, if the husband dies, it is the brother of the husband, it is his responsibility to take in his sister-in-law as his wife, even if he already has a wife, right? And so they, but here's the trick. This is not a genuine question about marriage, even though polygamy was a norm and acceptable for protection of women and children in that society. But this is not a question about marriage per se. It's really a very silly question. The Sadducees did not believe in the resurrection. So it was almost like a smart aleck group of folks who's like sometimes when my really, really heavily theological Arminian friends get together and go and crash at one of my Calvinist friends and say, okay, now we've got a question for you that you're not going to be able to answer. And boy, isn't this going to make you look stupid. And that's sort of the approach that the Sadducees had with Jesus, because the Sadducees were, for lack of a better term, the fundamentalists, the most strict, rigid in terms of what their scriptures were. Their scriptures were the law of Moses, the Torah. That's it, period. End of statement. And life was, you're born, you live, you die. That's it. End of statement. And you, while you're here, you live by the Torah. Now, the Torah was thousands of, or you know, several hundred, if not a thousand or more years old. You can look that up. I don't know. But there had been a lot of Jewish history since the Torah. There were oral traditions. There are the writings, the Psalms and the Proverbs, Ecclesiastes. Prophets have come along. So by the time of Jesus, you have all of these other traditions, including a relatively newer idea of a resurrection. Well, the Sadducees, they stuck to their Torah, and that's the end of it. So they go and they ask Jesus this question, because Jesus is being asked questions by the Pharisees who believe in all these other things or accept the oral traditions and the writings and this. And they're getting things from the scribes. Jesus is getting questions from them. But this is the Sadducees' way of, okay, we're going to ask a really bizarre question and bring this out to its logical conclusion by our reasoning, in which there is no answer, just to really make Jesus look bad. Or make him side with one of these other groups that we know are idiots anyway, right? And so they go and ask him this question about, is she the wife of this brother? And if that brother dies, then does she go to this wife? And she goes down seven brothers, right? One bride for seven brothers, we might call it, right? If you've ever heard of seven brides for seven brothers. One bride for seven brothers. Then they're dead. Now you've got this resurrection thing going on. Whose wife is she, Jesus? And Jesus, if he was Graham Chapman of Monty Python, would have just thrown his hand up and just said, that's silly. Let's just stop. But he doesn't. It reminds me, I think he would rather have done that Batman meme. Have you seen the meme that goes around with Robin asking a really stupid question and Batman slapping him across the face? I mean, it's kind of like he doesn't give time for that. He doesn't address the wedding thing very much, and he does not address their question. In fact, he says, okay, here's the deal. The resurrection's another realm. Marriage is here. Afterlife is different. But then He doesn't refer to anything from the writings. He doesn't refer to anything from the prophets or any of the oral traditions. He goes back and goes directly to their sacred text, the Torah. And he begins building from there. Proof of the resurrection from Moses and Abraham. That this mystery is something that we experience, but it's not something you can know and not something that can be explained. And he uses their own scriptures against them. Now, we don't get into verse 39 and 40 in the text here that as it's listed, but it's right there. And it just ends up, hey, somebody else said, hey, that was a good answer, Jesus. And the Sadducees basically shut up. Because they didn't have an answer to his question. And that raises this. My friend Mike Smith, he's a pastor in Tennessee, about this text, he asks, how often do we fall into the trap of framing religious or even political questions in terms of yes-no answers that we think we already know the answer to in order to make a point or make a fool of someone else? Do we even use religious questions or even our own scriptures simply to win theological debates or point my position as the only right position and yours is obviously stupid? Do we consciously or even unconsciously try to tell Jesus what he's supposed to believe and not supposed to believe in regard to us and the world and life and faith? Mike Smith asks, maybe it's time we focus less on trying to get the right answers and rather spend more time asking good questions.
I mean, I kind of want to see the way the conversation between the Sadducees and Jesus plays out on social media. Yeah. I mean, Bert, you're dead on. I mean, that's how we talk today, it feels like. Like that we ask questions only to trip each other up, and we ask questions that are impossible for someone else to engage because they don't, everything is about being right and it's not about conversation. I feel like that's pretty thick today. Maybe it's always been that way.
We do seem to have a hard time talking with one another anymore. Yeah.
And we'll see a lot of that over the next year with all the coming presidential debates.
Oh yeah, it's coming.
Yeah,
both
yeah.
of just each party, and then mm-hmm. when the two candidates come together, because the whole idea when they get there is they have been prepped with what is perceived weaknesses or some way to ask a question that's going to stump the other guy or woman and make right. them look, you know, foolish.
Right.
And that's the whole debate is I'm going to say something I want to say that I'm prepared to say. And I'm going to ask you something that you are not prepared to answer. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I think you're right, Nikki. We've always been doing this because obviously the Sadducees were doing it to Jesus.
Mm-hmm. Well, I don't think we want the answers. Like I think about my training in seminary with my pastoral care and counseling professors. And, you know, we're trained to ask open-ended questions. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then we're trained to listen. And I don't think that... I don't think that our questions are open-ended. I don't think they're geared to truly have that conversation. And I don't think that we're prepared to listen because there's so much that comes at us every single day. We just start tuning it out. Whatever doesn't sound good to us or quote-unquote right to us, then we just kind of tune it out. It takes much more, I don't know what the word would be, it takes much more dedication and much... It's difficult to sit and to listen and to be willing to ask those open-ended questions.
And to be willing to sit, not for 5 minutes, but for days or weeks mm-hmm. or months or years with the question not being answered, to live with the question.
We're not good at waiting. At least I'm not. I was talking to a friend the other night about that, and especially in difficult times, I think, mm-hmm. Who wants to sit in pain and frustration and all that stuff? So it's like, we just don't like to wait. And we also are kind of, we're in a culture of instant gratification. And so if we sit for years or months or whatever and have to contemplate, God forbid, you know, or just be quiet and listen, that's uncomfortable.
I think we end up losing so much when our discourse is only about proving we're right and mm-hmm. not about conversation and listening and collaborating and listening to understand, because we can listen to understand even if we don't agree or even if it's not our same perspective. And I think in this particular text, Bart, I think you pulled this out of it. You've got the Sadducees who ask this question to try to stump Jesus or make Jesus look stupid. But Jesus's response is not to prove he's right. I think Jesus' response is trying to draw them into conversation by engaging them where they are.
Mm-hmm. Engaging them with their specific
right.
sacred text.
Right. Mm-hmm. And I just wonder if there are ways that we can bring that into our own conversations with one another, and how do we make those shifts?
I think part of the difficulty is that if we do that, Nikki, then we risk our membership, we risk our commitment, mm-hmm. we risk our, I don't know what the word, our group identity,
mm-hmm. our tribe,
our tribal, yeah. because we're to do that means we're going to open ourselves up beyond those borders.
Yeah.
We're going to poke holes in the walls. We're going to make ladders over the walls. And it's not necessarily that you move from one to another as much as you expand and remove the barriers between mm-hmm. you. Mm-hmm. Or in some cases, you do completely step out of one and into another.
Sure, sure.
Mm-hmm. And that's frightening, because our identity is always with a, you know, some group.
Yeah.
Whether it's mm-hmm. our family, our church.
I guess I'm just sitting here going, wow, if you just happened upon Jesus and you had a chance to ask one question, is that the one you'd ask? I've got it. Hang on. I mean, seriously, what would you ask?
Oh. Mm. Bert, when you talked about identity, I think something that struck me is that I understand we need community, and I understand that we find our identity in different ways. But I there's part of me that kind of feels like, and maybe this is just a real naive view, I don't think it is, that if we found our identity in how God sees us, instead of finding our identity in I belong to this group or that group, or I'm this person, or I have this vocation, or I have this car. Like, I know that sounds simplistic, but I think there's something to it, because yes. then, I mean, we are known by God by our name, like the parable of the good shepherd. Jesus calls us by name, like we know his voice and he knows us. And so if I look at my identity through that lens, then I think if we could see ourselves that way, it might open up the conversation a little bit more, because then I'm no better than you or any other person, because God loves us all, right? It might free, if I'm getting my identity from God, then it might free me up to listen and to look with eyes of compassion and to hear another person speak, even if they don't speak the words that are just like mine. And I guess that circling back around to what David said, if I were to, the question I would ask Jesus is, who am I to you? Spoken like a true Enneagram 4, darn it. Want to know my identity. But yeah, who am I to you? What do you see in me? What do you see in all of us little people running around here? And
David, I have to admit that question like drew up a bunch of emotion for me. And I don't know what that is. It was a profound question. And I mean, I've had 30 questions run through my brain, and all of them seem really important, and none of them seem adequate.
Well, the ones running through my head, I'd be scared to ask. Right? I mean, so like, what if I said, so what's the most important thing I should be doing? Ooh. I don't know that I want to hear that.
Right?
Yeah.
Ooh. Yeah. I'll let you ask that one, Dave.
Yeah. Oh, no. I'll be walking the other direction. See you
it's
later.
Probably going to be more like, do these pants make me look fat?
Oh, wait, can I have a do-over?
Yeah, sorry. I mean, or would it be a question about, you know, why bad things happen? Mm-hmm. Why did Aunt Becky have to go? And what's the whole deal with cockroaches? Why?
Right?
Why was there a need for that?
Or mosquitoes. Come on.
I know.
Right?
Or spiders that jump.
Oh, goodness.
Don't they all? Are some of these just leftover rough drafts?
In Louisiana, the roaches fly.
Oh.
In South Georgia, they do too.
Yeah.
And they come, goodness. They fly at you.
Yeah. They're evil. No.
They're awful.
Sorry.
I'll take Kentucky any day.
I mean, it's a tough question.
I mean, I think I might ask, I mean, all of these are good. I might ask something about how do you let things go? How do you not hold on to a pain or a hurt or a failure? How do you let it go? I imagine if we think about it, the questions we ask reveal a whole lot about us.
Mm-hmm. Boy, howdy.
Right? It's a good exercise just for self-reflection.
So maybe the question is, so Jesus, what should I ask you?
Oh, spoken like a true philosopher.
Our kids might not have too much trouble with this, though. The little ones.
I'm fairly certain I know what my son would ask. He'd probably ask about every dead pet that was, is Buttercup in heaven right now?
We buried a hamster this weekend.
Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah. We have one in the freezer, so I can sympathize.
Yeah, I understand. We've had goldfish in the freezer before.
We need to explain. You put them in the freezer until you can bury them or dispose of them.
Right. Until you can properly. Get all the kids around to say their goodbyes.
I thought you were waiting until they had some medical thing to bring them back to life. Yeah.
No.
Cryogenics.
I have questions, yes.
I did try to resuscitate a goldfish one time, mostly because Gene Trotter did it successfully.
That's
so
amazing.
I thought I could.
I'm going to bite on that. So how does one resuscitate a goldfish?
I mean, you give them little compressions.
Oh, my God.
And Gene Trotter, who works with Faith Lab. Yeah, yes. Successfully shared on the social media about her experience of resuscitating a goldfish. And so one night, I found our goldfish of 6 years floating in the tank, but he still had a little wiggle in his tail. So
he's not dead yet.
He's not dead yet. And so, oh my gosh, this whole thing's gonna be on the podcast. So then I just gave him a few little squeezes and it worked for about 5 minutes. He got a little life back.
Oh.
And then he floated and I stuck him in the freezer till we could have a funeral for the fish and flush him away.
I'm sorry for your loss, Nikki.
Thank you. Yeah.
It stinks to lose a pet, so.
It does.
It really does.
This was a fish that was won at a fair, and it lived for 6 years.
Wow.
That's impressive.
Amazing. Amazing. Okay, where were we?
No, don't. The moral to that story is do not listen to Gene Trotter.
This is right. This is right. Can we tag her in this one when we...
We really do. Oh, gosh.
Oh, my gosh. And she can tell a story, so.
She can. Maybe it wouldn't really matter what we ask Jesus. Mm. I mean, maybe it's just enough to be there. Mm. I mean, maybe it's not about getting answers.
Mm-hmm. You know, we harp on the Sadducees, and it was certainly an
onerous question. Mm-hmm. But it was also true to who they were.
Mm-hmm.
And it was the things that mattered to them. And even if we think that it doesn't make any sense, Jesus engaged. Jesus did not dismiss. And when you read 39 and 40, they were changed. Mm-hmm. Maybe that is the example for us about how to engage people when we think they have silly ideas or silly questions, or
because we all do.
Because we all mm-hmm. do. I mean, I tried to resuscitate a goldfish.
Yes, you did.
David, close us out with that. I don't know about
it. Usually I can figure out how to wrap one of these up, but we've gone places.
Laughter is good. Don't ask silly questions, but definitely be silly.
Definitely be silly. And yes. Well, what an interesting conversation. Thank you, Jesus, for being patient with our silly questions. Mm-hmm. I'll close with this thought that's been running through my mind, because often when we think about asking someone the big questions, we think about loved ones, maybe pets we've lost, but also loved ones that we've lost. And the death of my father is still fairly fresh for me. And if I had a chance to be with him again, I think I would just want to watch a football game together.
Oh, yeah.
You know what I mean? I really don't think I would have questions for him. I would just want to have that good time. Because now, when it's Saturdays and it's football, it really freaks me out, because Dad and I would always talk about how terrible the Razorbacks are. and so we have plenty to talk about. But I really miss that now. You know, I reach for the phone and it's like, dadgummit, you know? Mm-hmm. But there's something about that bond and the ability just to be together and enjoy a bad game and mm-hmm. And be father and son. And maybe there's some wisdom in that for how we are with each other and with Jesus, that it's not so much about having the right answers. It's maybe it's just about walking together. Thank you all for a funny, poignant, and good conversation.
Thank you.
Find more information about this podcast, as well as videos and teaching resources for this session, at faithelement.net. Faith Element is a service of Faith Lab.